The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
I can hardly wait to see you come of age, but I guess we'll both just have to be patient. It's a long way to go, a hard road to hoe. Yes, it's a long way to go, but in the meantime, before you cross the street, take my hand. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Before you go to sleep, say a little prayer every day, in every way. It's getting better and better. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Darling, 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 darling Sean.
Our prelude this morning was John Lennon's Beautiful Boy. It was a track on Lennon's last album. It actually came out a month before he was killed on the streets of New York by a deranged gunman. It's a love song to his son, Sean. It captures feelings of affection, protection, and it acknowledges the enormity of the task of raising a child. I can hardly wait to see you come of age, but I guess we'll just have to be patient. Because it's a long way to go, a hard road to hoe. Yes, it's a long way to go, but in the meantime, before you cross the street, take my hand. And the song hints at the uncertainty and the capacity to accept uncertainty when you become a parent. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a liberal, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, dedicated to exploring new paths to kindness and spirituality. And I'm delighted and honored to lead our congregation in worship this morning as we acknowledge Father's Day 2024. I want first of all to express my disappointment in not being with you in the sanctuary this morning. As some of you know, I came down with something really nasty several days ago. At its peak, I was running a temperature around 104. And my fever finally broke last night, but I was still kind of weak and unsteady on my feet and didn't think it was prudent to try to get into the fellowship this morning to do the service. So, you know, thanks to the fact that I can depend on John, said, okay, we're going to try to do it this way. I'll be on Zoom, and our guest speakers, of course, will be in the sanctuary, and they'll be able to provide that live presence for you this morning. Our service this morning acknowledges an aspect of fatherhood in keeping with the Soul Matters theme for the month of June, the gift of renewal. Renewal in the biblical sense refers to a transformation, more specifically to a change into something new and different, something better. With members of our congregation, Ann Rostosky, David Perry, and Karen McCann, our service will highlight positive changes in our lives, in ourselves, brought about by being a father or by being fathered. at a particular time in our lives or over the course of a lifetime. That course may not always have been smooth and linear. It may at times have needed repair and restoration. Yet it never ceased to impact the quest for personal identity and the search for truth and meaning. So on behalf of the TPUF Worship Committee and the fellowship as a whole, I welcome you, whoever you are, wherever you may be on your spiritual journey, on your life's journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, know that you are welcome here and that you're invited to worship with us this morning, beginning with the lighting of our chalice. And I believe Phil Manis will light our chalice while I recite, "We light our chalice for fathers and fatherhood," words by Reverend Peter Friedrichs. For sleepless nights awaiting the curfew breakers, for anxious hours as a driving instructor, boy, can I relate to that, for hours spent on sidelines cheering and watching school plays, sometimes resting our eyes, for the pressures of breadwinning and wait till your father gets home, for teaching moments and mentoring moments, for making up answers when you just don't know, but are expected to because you know everything, for scrapes and boo-boo kisses and band-aids, for hugs and kisses and silliness and play, for bedtime stories and early morning ice time, for all the aftershave and ties received as gifts, for handing over car keys and for waves goodbye, for father-daughter dances and cradling grandchildren for the first time, for all the moments and all the meaning in the role of a lifetime. We light our chalice for fathers and fatherhood. And now as we light our peace lamp, please join responsively with the words printed in italics on the screen. May peace be with us. Now let's sing together our gathering song, hymn number 34, "Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire." The quote on our order of service this morning makes an important distinction. It says anyone could become a father, but it takes someone special to become a dad. And what makes that difference? The words of our opening song provide an answer to that question. The words are an adaptation of chapter 13, verses 1 to 3 of Apostle Paul's first letter to the Christian community of Corinth, referred to today simply as 1 Corinthians. Michael Tacey, musician, composer, teacher, and founder of a foundation that promotes the healing power of music, will lead us in singing, "Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire." Let us sing those words mindfully as they proclaim the transforming power of love. I'm going to have to turn to John here, who can see if we have any children in the sanctuary and if we need to sing them off to their RE class. John?
We do have a couple of children here. The Enrights are here with us. And so if we'd like to sing them off to their classes, I think we all know the words.
Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. All clear, John?
All good.
Okay. As I said in my opening remarks, our service this morning focuses on the path to renewal that fathering or being fathered provides. We'll hear in a few minutes stories of how being fathered had a positive impact on the lives of two daughters and a musical testament to the transforming power of being a father. I'll start off our exploration with a personal account of the transforming power of fathering in a piece I call Recovering the Past, Revitalizing the Future. When I say recovering my childhood, what comes to mind is that obviously we remember childhood experiences, sometimes vaguely, sometimes very specifically, but then we're simply experiencing them. When you have children, and I certainly know when I had my children, I was reliving my childhood in a sense. Whether it was learning to walk, learning to ride a bike, hit a baseball, learning to walk through a nature path and look at the flowers and touch the trees and all those things. And it was such a meaningful experience because there was a whole additional level of meaning here, because I was experiencing it, but I was also observing the experience. And that just added a whole new level of meaning and depth to that experience. And this was true, of course, on holidays. I mean, you remember as you got older, I mean, what was Halloween anymore, or Easter, or Christmas, or things like that? But when I had my son, remember, and I think I could, I related so much to what the eminent theologian and educator Sophia Lyon Foss had to say. Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping. I mean, Christmas, I didn't need a virgin birth to sense the miraculous. Every child's birth, I realized then, was a manifestation of an ineffable wonder and mystery, of a divine spark that burns within us. And each newborn child is a living embodiment of hope. When we cherish and nurture a child, we cherish and nurture the belief that life, one life, no matter how or where begun, can inspire us to higher aspirations and greater. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble here, folks. And greater love. I remember the first Christmas season after the birth of my son. Now, I had drifted from Catholicism in principle and practice several years before, but I didn't need any religious overlays to make the season merry and bright or to make it sacred. I had started my career in higher education in August, and now with my young family, I was back in Philadelphia for an extended stay. I was among family and friends, immersed in the familiar trappings of the season, treasuring the family traditions, the food, the decorations, the music, the laughter, you know, the whole nine yards. And it was a deeply emotional experience. Now, my six-month-old son had no idea what was going on. But I knew what was going on. Life was going on. Life was ongoing. It was a spiritual experience. I was created. I was a creator. It was a mystical experience. I was part of a reality which could not be separate from, and from which I could not be separated. Well, anyway, which leads me to that idea of how fatherhood revitalized the future. Revitalize literally means to infuse something with new life and vitality. And that was certainly the case when I became a father. I was to be part of the future. I had no choice. I had to be. I had to be there. See, I knew the path from infancy to childhood, to adolescence, to adulthood. My children couldn't. They hadn't experienced it. Now, I couldn't possibly have anticipated all the twists and turns on that path, so I couldn't dictate how they walked that path, but I could be a guide. I could be there when their plans for the weekend fell through, when a friend proved a little less than loyal, when they were struggling with something in school, when someone was bullying them in the schoolyard or whatever, because I had been there. I had done that. And so I was able to provide some type of perspective without telling them essentially this is what you should do, but helping them to find their way through that experience. And also to share in the joys, to be elated because they were elated over some achievement, over some circumstance that gave them a great deal of delight. And that's why I think becoming a father was probably the most transformative experience of my life. There's no doubt about it. I often said that, you know, getting married wasn't a real big change in my life. I mean, I had been dating my first wife for 3 years before we married, and actually getting married just made sort of our arrangement more convenient, you know. But boy, once that child entered my life, everything was changed. The focus of my life was changed. The prospects of my life changed. My feeling about life changed. And that has stayed with me throughout all these years. That's never changed. That's why I got kind of choked up when I was reading that chalice lighting and it talked about the ring being the most meaningful event in life. I'd like to turn the focus now over to Ann Rostosky, who has graciously volunteered to speak. Some of you, if you had looked at the order of service, you may have seen that Flo Shore was listed as the speaker. Unfortunately, Flo came down with something that I don't know if it's as bad as what I had, but sounds pretty nasty. And I spoke with her this morning, and she just didn't feel up to doing a presentation this morning. It's a shame. I know she was ready weeks ago to do this and had shared with me what she was going to say. And I'm just so disappointed. But I know that Ann Rostosky will more than adequately fill in as pinch hitter for her this morning. So I'd like to turn the lectern over to Ann right now. Ann?
Good morning, everyone. I'm sorry, I don't always like being up here. It seems like I'm here a lot these days. So please bear with me. I had a fabulous father, and I'm so happy to talk about him. My dad was an amazing man. He grew up in very humble roots. He grew up in Germantown. And if you drive by the house he lived in today, I don't know how anybody could have lived in that house. It was so small. They were very poor. He grew up during the Depression, and his father had a roofing business, and his job, they were collectors, he and my one uncle. One would go to the front door of a house where they had put a new roof on, The other went to the back door because when they knocked on the door, the people would run out the back door. They didn't want to pay. So anyway, my dad had one job his whole life. He started working as a young man at Leeds and Northrop. It was located in Germantown at that time. And then they moved their headquarters out to North Wales. So he moved his whole family out to suburbia. But in the meantime, when he was 22, he entered World War II. My dad was, and I'm going to get emotional on this one, he was a ball turret gunner in a B-17, and he was shot down in Italy. He was in prisoner of war camp. I'll try to tell you this story quick because it bears repeating, I think. When he was shot down, he was injured, his feet. He posed, an Italian family took great risk to have him pose as their son, but he was in a town and the German soldiers saw his shoes, so that's how he was captured. But he wrote a story. In fact, as an adult, he went to Ursinus and took a writing course, I think so he could write his story. And he gave it to a friend and asked the friend to give it to me and my sisters after his death. And the reason being, he went into very graphic detail about how he was treated in prisoner of war camp, and it was ugly. And to think of my dad as only being 22 years old and going through that experience, I mean, it's heartbreaking. But anyway, talk about transformation. So as a result, he made my life wonderful and my sisters, our whole family. I had such a great family, great childhood. And even as an adult, I mean, my parents planned out everything, their funerals, their long-term care, you know, we didn't have to worry about anything. So they made a really nice life for us. So that was transformation, I would say. John put this slide up here. My sisters were exchanging photos this morning for Father's Day, and I just had to share these. This was my dad when he was young and dapper, and he actually played semi-professional football. And you can see he's not real big, but he was a really fast runner, apparently. And this is my son, Lee, when he was either in high school or college, and he had Flat Stanley for one of my nephews. He may have taken it to college with him in Arizona, or he may have taken it on a trip. We went to Santa Cruz, California. We had to go to the skateboard park there because he was real into skateboarding at the time. So I'm not sure which that was. And this is him today with my grandson. So I should have a picture of Bill up here too. Some of you know him, some of you don't. But that wasn't one that came across my text this morning when John was quickly putting this slide together. So, you know, Bill was a good dad, and this is my son now, looking a little more fatherly with my grandson, and he's at my parents' grave. My grandson, I guess they planted this seed in his head in preschool. He said, on Memorial Day, we should go clean off my parents, his great-grandparents' grave. So we did. It was a family outing, and it was so neat to share that experience with them. So that's my son and my grandson, the next generation. So, and interestingly enough, my grandson at his tender age is very interested in military things. So I don't know, it wouldn't be a path I would choose for him, but you never know. My son grew up in this church, and now he's a born-again Buddhist. So when you expose children to all kinds of religions, you never know what's going to happen. Anyway, thank you, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers.
Thank you so much, Ann. We're going to hear from a father now, father we all know and love, David Perry. He wrote a song about an experience with his daughter, Allison, some years ago. He has revised it since. Oh, you are hearing the updated and, how could you put it, even greater version of the song. David?
This is Mr. David Height. Testing, testing. As John Gorka once famously said, can I get more talent in the monitors, please? Anybody know John Gorka?
Yes.
I'm from New Jersey. I don't expect too much. Classic song. I'd say Allison, who is watching, by the way, very wave. Hi, Allison. Has been my major muse as a songwriter. I sang and entertained kids for about 10 years before Christine and I had our own child. And that was transformative, as Jerry said, probably the single most transformative event of my life. And I've written probably 10 or 12 songs inspired by Allison, including one written before she was born, where when we found out we were pregnant, I wrote a song about Allison waiting to be born called Angel in the Wings. And that is how we announced to her parents that we were going to be parents, which was an emotional moment in and of itself. Before I sing that song, I just want to acknowledge my dad. This is my first Father's Day without Dad around. Last year, I sang a song for him called Mr. Fix-It, which he got to hear and loved, and I'm so grateful that that happened. But this year, we're flipping the script. I'm going to sing about my little girl. When she was born, I wrote a song sort of welcoming her to the world called First Time. And as she got older, I wrote a song celebrating her little life called Alice in Wonderland. And this is a song, like all my songs about Allison, inspired by a true story. First of all, I've got to make sure we can hear this. And if Christine was here in person, she'd tell me whether or not I'm in tune, but she's have to watch from afar. I was walking past a garden, my young daughter in my arms, when she pointed while holding me tight. Look, Daddy, it's a sunflower. The little darling squealed with delight. And I didn't have the heart to tell her that was not a sunflower, just a dandelion trying to find his way. When ever since he was a seed, he'd been told he's just a weed to be poisoned, pulled out, or thrown away. I was opening a gift that gave my spirits a lift, a big blue and white coffee mug. Look, Daddy, it says world's greatest dad. My daughter whispered as she gave me a hug. And I didn't have the heart to tell her I was not the world's best father, just a crazy guy trying to find his way. When ever since I was a child, they said I'm too free and wild to ever raise a kid someday. Well, that dandelion wasn't gonna hide from any stinking pesticide. That yellow fella had his pride. Yes, he was gonna stay. He would not heal or cower. He could feel his solar power. For one brief, bright, shining hour, he was a sunflower in my daughter's wide blue eyes that day. Sure, fatherhood is an endless test. and perfection, an impossible quest. So I knew I would never be the best. But what could I say? Sure, I could have up and told her as that coffee mug grew colder, like her now that she's older. But in the eye of the beholder, I was the world's greatest dad that day. I was walking past a garden, my young daughter in my arms, when she pointed while holding me tight. Look, Daddy, it's a sunflower. And who am I to say she wasn't right?
Thanks so much, David. And hello, Allison. We all love you. We're going to hear now from Karen McCann, who has agreed to share with us some reflections about her dad. It's part of the book that she put together when she was responding to a series of prompts from Storyworth. And I'm not sure if I heard this one before. She sometimes will share some of these pieces with us at the writers group. But I'll know when she starts. But it's if I've heard it, I'm certainly willing to hear it again, because it's usually wonderful stuff. Karen, it's always wonderful stuff. Karen, you're on.
This is about a father's advice. My father was a pragmatic person. He taught me to be strong as my brothers. More importantly, as strong as my mother. He revered his own mother, and I think that just carried down to his wife and his daughters. My dad's advice to me was to go to college, get a degree, live a loving and giving life. He told me to be independent, to stand up for myself, to stand on my own, and to always have my own money. I left college after my third year and went to California for a few months to stay with my brother and his wife. When I returned to Pennsylvania, my dad arranged for a job in London for me. Dad was a higher up in the civil service division of government, and he pulled a few strings to get me this entry-level job. It was a clerical job in the civil service, and he said I could easily advance. I, in the meantime, had fallen for a boy who I went to high school with, so I turned down this London opportunity. My dad said he would never do this again, and I could tell I had really hurt his feelings. I wish I had gone to London, but my life would be so different. I wouldn't have my children or my life experience as I've chalked up, so it's better the way it is. However, I might have been the queen. Who knows? When I decided to have a baby and be a single mother, I flew down to Florida, where my parents now lived, enjoying their retirement. I wanted to share the good news of my pregnancy with them. I flew to DC first to join my Aunt Irene, my dad's sister, as she was also flying to Florida to visit my parents and many of her Florida friends. I shared with her that I was newly pregnant and was planning on being a single mother. She sat for a minute and then told me I would make a wonderful, caring mother, no matter what the circumstance. Aunt Irene was the most independent woman I knew. She was widowed at a young age and continued on in her very successful career. She seemed proud that I was getting on with my life. I was 34 at the time. She also mentioned my mother would be beside herself with this news. Sure enough, she was right. Following her departure after visiting my parents, I told my dad I wanted to speak with him. He said, okay, I'll get your mother. I said, no, I'd rather it just be the two of us. I told him that I was pregnant and expressed how happy I was about this situation. He advised that although this was not the ideal way to start a family, and it would be a very hard road to travel at times, he understood my longing for a family of my own. He advised me to keep saving my money and to try to save even more, since now I'd be raising a child on my own. He also made it quite clear that I would not be moving to Florida to live with them. He said they had their own life now and they were really enjoying themselves. I was on my own, this was my choice. He would always support my choice, and now I should go forward with it. Pragmatic. I made it very clear to him that I had no intention of moving down to Florida to live with them. Daddy also said that my mother would not be happy with this situation. Sure enough, he was also right. Next, I told my mother, who sat with hands folded in her lap. The first thing she said to me was, well, you will move down here right away and live with us, of course, and we will help you raise your child. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. She said, yes, you will do this. You know nothing of raising a child, how hard it is, how expensive it can be. You'll live with us until the child is older, and then maybe you can get a place of your own. We have room for both of you. She added that this was not what she had planned for me at all. I reminded her that 2 years prior, I had sent them a long letter outlining my plan to start a family before I was 35. She said, and if you remember, I told you, you were not allowed to do that. I told her what my dad had said, and I reiterated, I was not going to come down and live with them in Florida. I reminded her that they had raised me to be independent, and I was. This was my independent decision. She said she would never forgive me for this choice, and she left the room. It was a very silent ride the next day to the airport. My dad got on the phone each week when we had our usual Sunday catch-up phone call. Mother was on the extension. I could hear her breathing, but she never said a word. This is the dichotomy of my parents. Daddy asked me how the job was going, how my latest doctor appointment had been, was my car still running well, how did I feel, and had I been able to find a suitable daycare for the baby, etc. All the sweet concerns that a parent would have for their pregnant daughter. He was very happy to hear that I had had two baby showers and wanted to know what I had gotten as gifts. Mother didn't speak to me until after I had my daughter. She was being her stubborn self. Daddy was being pragmatic, practical, honestly realistic. He always supported me, and I felt it. My dad passed in 2005, just a few months after my mother's passing. I miss them. A little advice I can share with you dads is to always be supportive of your children. Be patient, kind, and loving. Give them your best advice, and if they decide not to follow it, hug them and respect their choices. Happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. Thank you.
Wonderful stories, Karen. Wonderful. Yeah. Anyway, I think you've heard pretty good sample of experiences of fatherhood as a transformative event, and how even though the path of fathering or being fathered is not always, straight and narrow and smooth, it's there and we walk it, and it always has an impact on us throughout our entire lives. We've come to that point in our service now where we open our microphone to those among us who are experiencing a joy, lifting their spirit up, or a concern or sorrow weighing their spirit down. And John will explain how it is that we can participate after we listen to a musical interlude, Bright Morning Stars Are Rising.
So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. We are going to sing Spirit of Life, led by Christine Perry and accompanied by Isaac Strader. The lyrics will appear up on screen here in just a second.
Before we recite closing words this morning, I just want to take the time to express my, I can say almost inexpressible gratitude to John Sayre, who was thrown all kinds of curveballs with his service, with people coming out and leaving and my not being able to be in the sanctuary and some issues that came up with slides and so forth and everything. He just is, I don't know. He's just such an outstanding person and just a pleasure to work with. He just rolls with the punches and gets us where we need to be. Every time he's back there at the wizard's keyboard back there. So thank you so much, John. And our closing words this morning are a responsive reading of a prayer for Father's Day by UU minister, Reverend Kirk D. Lodeman Kirkland. And we should have the words up on the screen. You're invited to recite the words that are in italics. Let us praise those fathers who have striven to balance the demands of work, marriage, and children with an honest awareness of both joy and sacrifice. Let us praise those fathers who, by their own account, were not always there for their children, but who continue to offer those children, now grown, their love and support. Let us praise those fathers who, despite divorce, have remained in their children's lives. Let us praise those fathers who, as stepfathers, freely choose the obligation of fatherhood and earn their stepchildren's love and respect.
Let us praise those fathers who have lost a child to death and continue to hold the child in their heart.
Let us praise those men who have no children but cherish the next generation as if they were their own. Let us praise those men who are about to become fathers. May they openly delight in their children.
And let us praise those fathers who have died, but live on in our memory, and whose love continues to nurture us.
So be it. Our closing song this morning is hymn number 348, Guide My Feet. It's a traditional spiritual, a prayer of supplication, asking for guidance on life's journey. The kind of guidance we hope a father figure in our lives is able to provide, someone to stand by you, take your hand, search your heart. The choir and congregation of the First Plymouth Church, Lincoln, Nebraska, will lead us in singing, Guide My Feet. And please join in, the words are in the video. Although it's pretty simple, it's pretty repetitive. We embrace the light of memory, the light that illumines our past and connects us in a complex matrix with those who gave us life, and if we were fortunate, who blessed our lives with their presence, their wisdom, their guidance, their love. In our relationships, we carry forward that light and share it, sometimes deliberately, sometimes unconsciously, with all those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch our own. Now, please stay with us if you can for announcements and for the postlude. It's a version of Bob Dylan's Forever Young, performed by Pete Seeger and the Rivertown Kids.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the lights surrounding you. May you always be courageous. Stand upright and be strong. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. Always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of changes shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. May you stay. Forever young. May you stay forever young. May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. May you stay forever young.
You're never too old to change the world.
Holly is still online here. Have I? Oh, not any longer. Okay.